Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. You're going to be glad you did because our good buddy David Dossie is back with us. David is the intellectual property attorney in the Brain Trust, and he's a good friend of ours and my corporate intellectual property attorney, by the way, in the interest of full disclosure. We used to call them patent attorneys, but they're so much more than that now. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you back. And, of course, folks, he's a partner with Gallagher and Dossie out of the great state of Ohio and the great city of Columbus, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, right there in the central Ohio. David, we're going to talk about trademarks today?
Right. I was thinking of topics that are common mistakes that small businesses make with respect to intellectual property.
Yeah.
And one of the recurring themes is someone starts a business and then, you know, they start gaining steam and then they think, you know what, I really should protect my name, either the company name, the service name, or even a product that they're launching. And oftentimes they realize it's too late that they can't protect the name. And this, unfortunately, it's fairly common that they've invested a lot of money and branding and time and effort into that name before they learn that it's not a protectable name.
What happens is, David, is somebody starts a company, and at that moment in time, they don't know whether they're going to make it or not.
Right.
They're just trying to come up with a name that they can, like, that somebody told them they know they got to have a name. Maybe they spent a lot of time on it, maybe they didn't, but they come up with a name for whatever reason, and because they got to put it in the yellow pages, they got to put it on their business cards, they got to put it on the store, on the sign out front. So they come up with a name, and they probably spend a little time on it, just a little bit, so that they can, you know, hopefully they recognize the importance of coming up with something that's memorable and catchy. I mean, that's pretty intuitive for most people. But again, at that moment, the jury is still out on whether they're going to make it or not. So the concept of spending any extra time to make your name legally endure is really not on the list of things to do today.
Well, and oftentimes it's a lot harder than people think. And then a second common error people make is that just because they can register their corporation with their Secretary of State,
right,
that does not mean that they actually have rights in that name or that someone else doesn't have rights in that
now
name.
What, see, now, and that is, that does trouble people. I mean, there are people right now who are furrowing their brow, David, because they said, what? They're saying, are you crazy? I mean, I filed my name. I've got, Johnny's Jean Store or whatever. I filed that with Incorporated. I filed that with the state of, with the Secretary of State, and he said I'm legal. So what do you mean I can't file? I can't. That's not a name that I can use.
Well, that's just complying with the laws with regard to properly setting up your corporation and registering your corporation with the state to do business.
All that means is that nobody else has that corporation in your state.
Right.
That name in a corporation in your state, right? That's all it means.
And then surely don't assume that the state does any, you know, research beyond just looking in their database. They don't look at federally registered trademarks. So
right.
they would register your corporation, which would be in direct violation, clear trademark infringement of a federally registered mark.
So if you got Johnny's Jeans Store Incorporated, and somebody in the state next door or three states over sells a federally registered product called Johnny's Jeans, then you could be infringing on him.
Right.
Or her.
Exactly.
Even though it's just the name of your company, you're not necessarily trying to sell jeans that compete with him. Is that right?
Well, that's a fine line test between a trade name and what's being used as a trademark. But most people do blur the lines between a company name being a trade name and using it as a trademark or a service mark. So,
I think I may have told you about this little ice cream company in a pretty good sized town that I know of that opened up as Billy Joe's Ice Cream, whatever the name was, operated for years. He was there for years. Nobody said anything, and all of a sudden, somebody came in and put his name out of business because they had the federal trademark for the name of his ice cream company.
Yeah, ice cream business. It happens more often than you would think.
That was kind of a sad one because he'd been there for a long time, and all of a sudden, somebody came in and basically trumped his name. Ponytail, we're going to be right back, and David's going to help us understand how not to get ourselves into that kind of a bind right after these messages. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. Little Van Halen bringing us back. I like that little piece of that song. That's from the Jump song. That's a good part of it. 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. Use it to your advantage. You got 1 minute. You got 30 minutes. Actually, not even that long. 1 minute or actually, we got 5 seconds. We got stuff you can do there in 5 seconds. Or 3 minutes or 15 minutes, whatever you like. We've got a knowledge base there where you can ask your questions. That's askjim.biz. We got our blog there, jimsblog.biz. You can find that off the homepage as well, where you can check out the most recent blogs that we posted. And also you can check out my newsletter, which I hope you'll do. And we'll send you that by email on Sunday afternoon, get you ready for the week ahead. And, of course, you can listen on the Internet. You can listen to the show live. You can listen to the replays. And also, you can follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/JimBlasingame. So check that out when you get a chance as well. David Dossie is our guest. He's our good friend and partner with the law firm, the intellectual property law firm of Gallagher and Dossie. And we're talking about trademarks and how not to get yourself into a bind on trademarks, David. And we've really got some people furrowing their brow because they think that they're okay because they're incorporated, but they may not be. Now, there's a pretty good chance that they're probably okay, but I'm more worried, David, about the fact that this company is now actually going to be successful. They've created some brands, some trade names that they're using successfully, but they haven't done anything to protect it for themselves. What do you think?
Well, there are four basic concepts of trademark law that if anyone can understand them, and if you understand them, that allows you to launch products with names that are protectable, and hence, then you'll be able to prevent others, including your competition, from using a similar name.
Right.
And obviously, there's a lot of value in that, and in some industries, such as, industries that franchise businesses, that is critical, fundamental to the success of the company. And so in trademark law, there's what we call a spectrum of distinctiveness. When you select a name for a product or a service, the more distinctive it is, the more likely you are to be able to protect it under the trademark law and therefore prevent others from using it. On the other end, if it's a generic name, generic names are not protectable, and therefore someone could open a business or launch a product in the exact same category as you, and you would not be able to do anything about it.
So could I trademark Jim's Hamburgers?
No, no.
Jim's Fantastic Hamburgers?
Probably not. Right. In the first category of that are generic marks that are.
How about Jim's Burnt Hamburgers? Could I do that?
Probably not.
Yeah. Because it's got the word hamburger associated with it.
Jim is a surname, so
yeah.
That you the general public policy is people should be able to use their names if they want to. Now,
right.
There are times that surnames, once you prove that it's acquired distinctiveness or secondary meaning, mm-hmm. that surnames can register. So that
right.
McDonald's, you know, that was a person's name, and it registered because they showed that people associate it with their restaurants, and therefore, even though if my last name was McDonald, I could not open a McDonald's restaurant.
Wow.
But that is a very, that is extremely difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a big exception, and anyone starting a business should not rely on that.
Right.
The other reasons you were saying hamburgers. Hamburger, assuming that is one of your products, that would be descriptive of your products. So descriptive trademarks, like if I were opening a computer store and called it Computer Land, well, that's descriptive. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
a land of computers or a store of computers. And other terms that often are found just to be descriptive are if you throw in things like best or reliable or tasty. So in your case, burnt, Jim's burnt hamburgers. you know, so there are generic marks that would be like Raisin Bran for cereal.
Mm-hmm.
Raisin Bran just describes, you know, it's a characteristic of the product itself, or Ivory.
Yeah. So it's not it would not be predictable then.
Right, that would not mm-hmm. be predictable.
All right.
The next category would be descriptive marks, and this is the biggest category that people come up with because they are exactly that. The name describes the product or the services, and it's easy to come up with those names. And the example I gave before was Computer Land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's easy to come up with, but they are not registerable until you can establish that there is some secondary meaning associated with that mark. So generally, you want to definitely avoid generic marks, and you know, ideally you want to avoid descriptive marks.
Mm-hmm.
A third category is what we in trademark law call suggestive marks, and that would be marks like Fruit Loops or Chicken of the Sea, Copper Tone for suntan lotion, Greyhound for bus, Jaguar, 7-Eleven stores. You know, at one
mm-hmm.
point that was for a store open from 7 in the morning till 11
mm-hmm.
at night. So suggestive marks allude some quality or characteristic of a product or service, but, you know, still require some interpretation on the part of the consumer. So now you're into categories of marks that are protectable.
Mm-hmm. And this is very interesting, folks. And even though a lot of it's pretty intuitive, you can also see where it's good that we have guys like David Dossi to help us with these things. Now you know why why I use him for all of my trademark work. It's 10-10. We're going to be right back. We got a couple of more categories to talk about right after these messages. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. The small business advocate, David Dossi, is our guest. And he's with Gallagher & Dossi, the intellectual property law firm that I encourage you to check out their website. And, David, give us that website, please.
It is invention-protection.com.
Invention-protection.com. And, folks, check it out. It's not your grandfather's intellectual property website. And David would be glad to work with you. David, you work with people all over the country, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
And, of course, you do international. You help people with international protection as well, don't you?
We do, yeah. We help file for trademark protection around the world.
Patents and all the other kind of copyrights. You do a lot of copyright work?
We do a little bit. In the copyright arena, generally from a legal perspective, attorneys do more copyright litigation just because the government has actually done such a good job of making the copyright office accessible to the public that
mm-hmm.
most people file their own copyright applications.
Right. Quickly, is the patent office improving? You know, for it was a time there when they weren't able to get through all the patents and there was a big backlog. Is that opening up a little bit?
No, the backlog still remains. You know, with every new administration, different rules are proposed for cutting the backlog back and improving processing times. And you know, those topics are always hotly debated. And
right.
So we'll see what makes it into
law. So not any better then, huh? That's
no.
Sad. Let's get back to the trade market. You were telling us about the five areas that you need to focus on when you're creating a trademark. You've got the generic and the descriptive, which typically are not protectable. The suggestive are more predictable. Give us another. You mentioned chicken of the sea. Now, why is that suggestive?
Because that is actually for tuna fish. So if you think of, you know, it's not for chicken. It requires, and, you know, I guess Jessica Simpson made this famous when she, you know, thought that chicken of the sea was actually chicken. It requires some thought to think, well, this is fish, not chicken.
Well, and she also said, I don't know what it is, but I want it. That's all right. So that's a good point. So all right, what's another example?
Okay, the most protectable category of marks, or marks that are the strongest, are marks that we call fanciful or arbitrary marks. And those, a fanciful mark is a coined term or a word that you make up, and it has no link to the product or service that you're offering. And those are the most marks that become the strongest. And some examples of
like Nike,
well, like Kodak, like Clorox, like Exxon, like Singular, like Verizon. You know what?
Frigidaire.
Frigidaire might be a little more suggestive, because
not in the beginning.
Oh, really? What was the first product?
I guess maybe the beginning. Yeah, okay, all right, I guess so. Because
I'm thinking of coolers and fridges.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I was just thinking that, you know, Frigidaire was a brand that actually they lost the power of their brand because everybody called every refrigerator a Frigidaire.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good problem to have, that a mark becomes so famous that it borders on eventually becoming generic.
It's one of the problems Xerox had. They didn't want us to say, when I worked for Xerox, they wanted us to correct people when they said, go Xerox this, because not be on a Xerox machine.
People often forget or don't realize that at one time, Aspern was a trademark, thermos, trampoline, escalator, cellophane.
But if it gets so much in the public domain, you can lose your brand, can't you?
Exactly. If people start using it commonplace to describe a category of products or services, and then it's no longer unique to your company or your offering.
But now, you didn't like my term Nike. Why wouldn't Nike be a fanciful, arbitrary name?
Well, I can't remember where that came from.
I don't think it means anything. I think he just liked the name and forced it down our throats. I think it's what happened. He just put so much money behind it, we all started believing that meant sporting goods.
Well, I remember a story, a program on CNBC all about the foundation of that and how he paid the graphic artist to come up with the swoosh and all that business. But I couldn't recall what the origins of the name Nike were.
So folks, you got the generic, descriptive, suggestive, and fanciful or arbitrary. Those are the things you need to focus on when you're creating your names and when you're working with your intellectual property attorney so you can protect and defend and leverage your own brands. Hey, David, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thanks for having me back.
As always, David Dossie, ladies and gentlemen, he's the best. He's a great guy to work with, too, by the way. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military standing a post around the world on behalf of you and me. God bless them. God be with them, everyone. I'll be back after the news. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.